Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. All of it brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. For just $5, you can try out the Dollar Shave Club starter set. Much more on that a little bit later in our podcast. Jim, our first two martinis are going to deal with the memo, of course, that came out on Friday from the House Intelligence Committee Republicans, and our last martini will deal with insanity in Philadelphia. So let's start with the good news from the memo, and that is that we have tremendous transparency, and we'll see what the Democratic memo says and what the supporting evidence, if that ever comes out, will say to help fill in the picture even more. But we learned some important things in this memo that was compiled by the House Intelligence Republicans, primarily Trey Gowdy, as well as other investigators who saw the underlying evidence. Chairman Devin Nunes, of course, has his name on it. We know about this dossier that was compiled by an avowed Trump critic named Christopher Steele, a former British intelligence agent. Perhaps the biggest issue here is that the recently ousted deputy FBI director, Andrew McCabe, testified just weeks ago in December of last year that the FISA warrant that was issued to surveil Carter Page, who was connected to the Trump campaign, would never have been issued without the dossier. At the same time, the head of the FBI's counterintelligence unit, Bill Priestap, testified that the Bureau had not even vetted the dossier before using it to obtain the warrant, telling lawmakers their corroboration efforts were in their infancy at the time the initial warrant was granted. That information was not presented to the court, according to this memo, and neither, and this is disputed, though, was the information that the dossier had been paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee. Oh, and by the way, the FBI and Justice Department presented a Yahoo News article as independent verification that the dossier was truthful when the man behind the dossier was also the source for the Yahoo story. So, Jim, like we said, more opinions, more memos perhaps to come on all of this. Certainly some very disturbing things if these turn out to be true. And as we've said before, the more the American people know about this, the better, because all of this hand-wringing and screeching about how this memo would somehow compromise methods and sources and upset the rule of law turned out to be a whole bunch of hogwash.
Yeah, this is one of those circumstances where we kind of had a sense that the members of Congress who were saying that they saw it and were shocked and shaken and gobsmacked, and some folks saying this will be bigger than Watergate. Look, okay, it's not bigger than Watergate, but just because it's not bigger than Watergate doesn't mean it isn't significant. And yes, it's not a complete exoneration of the Trump administration. I don't really think anything in here has that much of an impact on the Mueller investigation, and I don't see any reason why that should be proceeding forward. Rosenstein is only mentioned in passing about one more person who approved the continuation of the FISA surveillance of Carter Page. It sounds like at that point he's kind of signing off on something that's already been decided. No good reason to get rid of Rosenstein, at least based on what we see in this memo. Having said that, look, if you go back a couple of years, we've been having these arguments about the FISA courts going back to the Bush administration. It certainly heated up in the Obama administration when people figured out that the FISA courts were approving something on the order of like 99.999% of all requests for surveillance. And some people looked at that and said, well, wait a second. Okay, either the FBI is just phenomenal in who they request. And this is out of like 33,000 over the years. This is a fairly significant amount. Or the FISA courts were turning into a rubber stamp. And we got assurances. In fact, it was Democratic senators who were the ones who were saying, hey, wait a second. This has turned into a very one-sided process. The FBI gets the authorization to eavesdrop and electronically monitor anybody they want to from these courts. This is not really a form of justice. And the judges said, no, this is all on the up and up. And the FBI said this is all on the up and up. And the Department of Justice all said this is no, this is perfectly OK. Now, people pointed out this is a process in which the FBI or Department of Justice goes to the judges. I think there's about nine of them. They're all appointed by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. They go through background checks to make sure they can be trusted with, you know, obviously very sensitive, very secret intelligence information. And they look at it, and the FBI says, here's why we want to eavesdrop on this person. We think they're up to no good. And the judge either says yes or no. Now, you may have noticed there is no defense attorney in that process. There is nobody to make the argument, you know, this person did nothing wrong, and there's really no good reason for the FBI to start listening to their phone lines and checking their emails and doing all the other kinds of forms of electronic surveillance that the FBI can do. There is no other side of the argument. And all the lawyers involved and all the DOJ and all the judges said, no, this is fine. Well, now we know, assuming everything in the Nunes memo is accurate, that it's not fine, that this is not a good process, because the FBI can withhold some fairly key information about the identity of their source. Look, I keep hearing Christopher Steele get described as, you know, the next James Bond. He's this unbelievably, you know, super sophisticated, in the know, you know, British intelligence guy. Okay, look, any way you want to slice it, he was working for the Hillary Clinton campaign and he was working for the Democratic National Committee. By the way, in this argument, you keep seeing people insisting, well, Republicans first hired it. Okay, look, it was the Washington Free Beacon that originally contracted with Fusion GPS to do research into Trump's business background. They found some stuff. They didn't find very much. And this is around, I think around May, Trump becomes the Republican nominee and the Washington Free Beacon loses all interest in this. You can argue about whether that says something good about the Washington Free Beacon or bad about the Washington Free Beacon. But the point is that they dropped their interest. They are no longer employing Fusion GPS. But Fusion GPS goes to the DNC and they are contracted to start. No, keep digging. Keep looking into Trump stuff. So the idea that, oh, all this began with Republicans, thus it can't be, you know, you can't blame Democrats for this is all kind of nonsense. Fusion GPS does this investigation. And I think if you're a judge, and you're being asked to authorize, you know, electronic monitoring, eavesdropping, all that kind of stuff, you ought to know about the source. You ought to know if this guy has a partisan axe to grind. You ought to know if this guy might have some reason to make things sound worse than they are. If you're working for Hillary Clinton, I think you've got a very strong incentive to make things look as bad as possible for Donald Trump. And this is the sort of information that should be in front of the judge. Now, you might argue if the judge had known that, they would have authorized the monitoring anyway. Okay, they might have, they may not have. The fact that the FBI did not tell them this makes me think they withheld it for a reason. I don't buy this idea that they just forgot to mention this guy was working for the DNC and for Clinton. I keep hearing, you know, reports in the New York Times saying that, well, they said that the source was political. That's not labeling the motivation of this guy. So anyway, you know, there are certain judges who have different reactions about how much that would have influenced their thinking. Hugh Hewitt has a bunch of judges who are saying, look, if I'd known that, I never would authorize. I'm never going to authorize electronic monitoring of somebody because of what the partisan opposition researchers of the other campaign did. If you're the FBI and you're doing something as sensitive as this, you need to have every I dotted, every T crossed. And you got to absolutely positively make sure everything you're doing is on the up and up and you haven't cut any corners. And I think the most straightforward and indisputable pro-Trump argument that you can make based on what we see in this memo, Greg, is that when push came to shove at the FBI, they were willing to cut corners because it was Trump. They knew in their gut this guy was a bad guy and that they didn't really feel the need to tell the judge everything that might have made the judge say no. Except that's unethical. That's not what we expect from the FBI. And look, does that blow up the entire investigation? No, but you know, does this mean that the deep state really is this group of guys from the X-Files, you know, the shadowy figures from the X-Files and cigarette smoking man? No, but it does suggest that there was groupthink at the highest levels of the FBI and Department of Justice, and that they had one standard for going after Donald Trump and his associates that they would not have had for other political figures.
Well said. And we move to our bad martini now, and it's still related to the memo. So the fact that the Democrats now are reacting to those troubling revelations, at first, they were saying that sources and methods will be compromised, rule of law is at stake, Congress and the law enforcement community can never trust each other again, and all of a sudden became, what's the big deal? I don't see what's wrong here. Well, there's plenty wrong here, but at the same time, this broke down, as we suspected, along partisan lines, people seeing what they want to see in here. And on the one hand, the Democrats completely ignoring abuses by the FBI and the Justice Department, especially in terms of injecting political favoritism where it absolutely does not belong. And at the same time, you've got Republicans ignoring the fact, and Democrats and other Trump critics certainly jumping on this, that it is mentioned in the very last paragraph of this memo that Trump campaign figure George Papadopoulos was already under federal investigation as of July 2016, which is 3 months before all of this nonsense happened at the FISA court in October. So both sides, Jim, kind of have tunnel vision on this, and that's one of the big reasons we're in the environment we are right now.
Indeed, Greg. One of the I think the argument that they are hoping to get with this with the release of this memo is a legal concept called fruit of the poisonous tree, right? That in other words, if you have some sort of search that is not legally authorized, it's not with a warrant, there is no exigent circumstances of trying to save someone's life that could authorize the police to look at a particular place, then they can't use what they find in that search as evidence. You know, if you watch enough cop dramas, you see some sort of lines like this where, you know, there's a mistake on the warrant and the lawyers try to argue that because of the mistake on the warrant, the police looked in the wrong place and this isn't it is not admissible in court. I don't know if that's exactly the argument you can make here, particularly if, as we've seen both from previous news reports and the last paragraph of the Nunes memo, this all started because this kid Papadopoulos was bragging to people, including, I guess it was an Australian diplomat or somebody, oh, the Russians are helping us out. They've got dirt on Hillary and stuff like that. And that's what began this FBI investigation several months before all this stuff on Carter Page. Now, you know, this way, the FISA application looks bad for the FBI, but I don't think you can say, aha, based on this, there's absolutely nothing that Mueller should be investigating. And there's nothing worth looking into, no potential crimes. I mean, let's face it, we've already had several people plead guilty to things, including Papadopoulos and stuff like that. So I really wish the Trump administration would not overreach. There's one story going around that Trump approved the memo without reading it. I don't know if I buy into that, but look, you know, we all can kind of see what's going on here. Donald Trump is convinced he's done nothing wrong, and he likes anything that supports that argument. Even if the evidence he's pointing to doesn't quite completely support that argument, he's going to interpret it as that, as, ah, this is all a witch hunt and all that kind of stuff. I don't think it's necessarily a witch hunt, but that doesn't mean that every decision that's been made in this law enforcement operation has been on the up and up and doesn't have any good reason to object. And I think the memo points to that first part there. But again, it's got to be all or nothing these days, Greg. And I think that's one of the reasons that, I don't know, it just leaves everyone looking haggard and you know, tired and exhausted and, you know, a little unshaven sometimes.
So let's talk about Dollar Shave Club. You've heard us talk of the amazing shave that we get from the Dollar Shave Club razor, especially when we use it with the Dr. Carver shave butter. Well, we're here now to tell you that we're never giving up our memberships. In fact, we're adding even more Dollar Shave Club products to our daily routines.
Now, Dollar Shave Club makes products for your hair, face, skin, shower, basically everything you need. And they have me looking and feeling amazing. And it's all their own original stuff. They only use the finest premium ingredients, and they deliver it to you just like they do with their razors. And that means for you, there's no more annoying trips to the store, cruising up and down the aisles, and looking at shelf upon shelf and asking the clerks, what is that and what do I do with it? Because let's face it, they're not going to know. I use Dollar Shave Club for almost everything. Razors, body cleanser, hair gel, and yes, even butt wipes. Dollar Shave Club has you covered from head to toe.
And now is a great time to give Dollar Shave Club a try. You can get your first month of their best razor along with travel size versions of the shave butter, body cleanser, and yep, the butt wipes for just $5. After that, replacement cartridges for the razor ship for just a few bucks a month. It's the Dollar Shave Club starter set. Get yours for just $5 exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. That's dollarshaveclub.com/martini. All right, Jim, let's move on to the crazy martini now. And of course, last night was Super Bowl 52. A fantastic game, back and forth. Defense apparently didn't make it to Minneapolis yesterday, except when it really mattered, when the Eagles were able to actually cause a Tom Brady fumble on a possession where I think most of us just assumed Brady would get the Patriots down the field and into the end zone to win the game. It did not happen. Nick Foles and the Eagles offense played great. They ended up winning 41-33, knocking down Brady's last-second Hail Mary at the end of the game. That's probably in contention for the good martini today, to be honest with you, that the Patriots lost another Super Bowl. But the insane part is, of course, how Philadelphia responded to this. Philadelphia has a not-so-great reputation in a lot of different ways in terms of how their sports fans react to various things. And, Jim, unfortunately, they more than lived up to that reputation. I'm going to quote liberally here from a Twitter feed from a guy who calls himself KMV. He's in Boston, admittedly, but he's posting all this stuff based on what's happening with the Philadelphia police scanner. The first of these is in the Morning Jolt today. Awning collapsed at the Ritz, calling for ambulances, multiple light poles being broken and taken to the ground. Someone landed on their head after falling off a light pole and is now unconscious. We have huge problems, per an officer. Rocks, bottles, and fireworks now being thrown at Broad and Arch. Troopers are being deployed. Someone just ran over a trooper via a four-wheeler or ATV. Trooper is up and walking, looking for the suspect now. Requesting SWAT teams to be on standby now. Lots of bottles, etc., being thrown at police officers. They are destroying everything per radio transmissions. Fire truck trying to respond to a call, can't get through, and idiots are now jumping on the truck. Sounds like a police officer has a broken finger. And now someone on top of a police van, others trying to climb up as well. On and on it goes. Traffic pole just thrown through the window of an AC Moore. Old Navy front storefronts being shattered. It happened at a Macy's. There's people running around the streets naked. Just all kinds of crap happening in the streets of Philadelphia last night, Jim. And you might want to cover little ears for this, as long as we're on that subject. No, the police horse wasn't punched last night, as it was after the Falcons game in the second round of the playoffs. Jim, a horse relieved himself, and an Eagles fan ate it. What do we even say to this?
Boy, how would we describe the grin on his face afterwards? I'll just let you decide which old-fashioned saying would fit there. Although it does raise the question of why would someone be grinning in that particular situation? You know, Greg, it was a great Super Bowl, really exciting down to the end. Those of us who are not fans of the New England Patriots can be relieved. We don't. I said it was like Groundhog Day. We were trying to see if we have six more months of gloating coming up in the offseason from New England Patriots fans. Congratulations, Philadelphia. You absolutely deserve it. New England can only console itself with all those other Lombardi trophies they have up in Foxborough. But, you know, it's funny. Everybody was kind of assuming that if Philadelphia won, or even if Philadelphia lost, that basically Philadelphia Eagles fans would just go nuts on the streets of their fair city. I have to say that for the first time in a really long time, Saturday Night Live was actually funny. Imagining the writing of the Declaration of Independence or the meeting of our leaders back in 1775, and how a bunch of the gathered, you know, founders of our country were happy to hear about Bunker Hill, but knowing that it meant they're going to hear about one more victory by the New England Patriots, and just how insufferable the Patriots of New England had become over the years, touting their victories. But of course, the Philadelphia Eagles fans of that era emerged. Talked about, you know, how they were going certain to win. And as I believe one of the founding fathers said, look, just because the British didn't burn down your city doesn't mean you have to do it for them. And yet that's pretty much what happened last night. The good news is there are several skyscrapers and buildings in Philadelphia still standing. But having said that, the city has a reputation for being rowdy, for being violent, for being out of control. And somehow they managed, like, you know, with that and knowing, oh, if we do this, people will think less of us. The fans went out and did it anyway. As I texted to my brother after the victory, have a nice purge. The one good bit of news I understand, Greg, is that as of this point, there are no fatalities and no really serious injuries, at least as far as I know. Greg, I have an observation. Whenever you have, because LA used to have this when the Lakers would win. Detroit, I understand they'd have rioting, although it's kind of hard to tell from the usual level of crime in that city. Ever since Axel Foley moved out, they just have not had the police force that they need to have in that city. In a circumstance like that, you notice nobody ever smashes their own car? Officer, I was out of control. I was so filled with joy and overcome by emotion with my team winning. I just had to destroy something. So I destroyed the other guys. Well, why didn't you destroy your own car? Because it's my car. Whoa, that's I'm not crazy. Come on, that's, you know. So I don't think you're really... I don't think this is temporary insanity. I think this is just vandalism looking for an excuse. And so if any of these guys committed crimes and were caught, they definitely should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And or when you hear about some of these guys, the people who are climbing the lampposts, you know, when they put flammable engine fluid, as I understand, Greg, it's kind of lucky we didn't have more explosions in downtown Philadelphia last night. You know, perhaps it was Darwinism last night, Greg. They were thinning the herd of Philadelphia Eagles fans. They've seen their victory and they're going out on a high note and won't be around for next season.
Yeah, I guess 5 hours or more of alcohol consumption before that probably didn't help the situation, but that probably happens with every Super Bowl winning team, so you can't really chalk that up to Philly alone. But maybe only winning it once every 57 years is a problem as well.
Man, New York's in trouble when the Jets win someday.
Someday. I loved your tweet about the Empire State Building lighting up green and white because they bought the bulbs back when the Jets made the AFC Championship game a few years ago and never got to use them.
They had to dust them off. They've just been sitting there. You know, maybe they get to use them at Christmas time. That's the only, and St. Patrick's Day. That's the only other time they get to use the green light bulbs. So yeah, apparently New Yorkers really get their nose out of joint about that. But you know how you do that? You win. And let me tell you, Greg, you know, when you have great dancers like Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr., there's really no excuse for not winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah. A lot of people love that ad. That was a little odd to me. But I know people love the throwback to the 80s with that. But, you know, the Giants had a lot of downtime to put that ad together. So.
Well, now we know they weren't practicing football.
Apparently not. Amazing. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget to visit our friends at Dollar Shave Club. You can get the Dollar Shave Club starter set for just $5. DollarShaveClub.com/martini. And tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.